This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 28th, 2019. Welcome, I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. The man who kept Kawhi Leonard together, the Toronto Raptors Director of Sports Science, Alex McKechnie, comes home to Vancouver with the Larry O'Brien Trophy. I caught up with Alex McKechnie at the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame on July 23rd. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is the organization that stages the annual Vancouver Pride Parade a modern-day equivalent of George Orwell's Animal Farm? It banned the University of British Columbia and it banned the Vancouver Public Library from marching in its taxpayer-supported annual parade because UBC and VPL both hosted controversial fringe speakers who don't share the Pride Board's opinion of transgendered people. Animal Farm was one of George Orwell's classics. It was about a group of farm animals that overthrew its farmer, Mr. Jones. They set out commandments, including all animals are equal, but they soon became that which they had fought against, a dictatorship. The pigs became more human-like, and the key commandment was amended. It became all animals are equal, except some are more equal than others. Another slogan changed, four legs good, two legs better. The Vancouver Pride Society spent years fighting for equality for lesbians, gays, transgendered, and queers, who all used to be shut out of society. Now they are widely accepted as equals, and there are laws to protect them. But that's not good enough for the Pride Society. The Pride Society wants to dictate who says what at UBC and VPL, if that person holds an opinion contrary to the Pride Society. The speakers at those events at the university and the library did not violate any of Canada's hate laws, and they would have otherwise drawn very little attention beyond the few hundred that turned out to hear them speak at those events. Meanwhile, the Pride Society's 2019 sponsors include Facebook. Facebook, the social media giant that has webcast terrorism, that has been a platform for hate, that has enabled the mass manipulation of voters, and has violated the privacy of millions. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. William Zheng in the South China Morning Post reports, China's top television news show runs week of reports slamming Hong Kong protesters. China's most-watched daily television news program has aired a series of damning reports about the anti-government protesters in Hong Kong and blamed external forces for helping to disrupt order in the city. State broadcaster CCTV's primetime evening news program, Xinwen Yanbo, began the run on Saturday with a report promoting the Protect Hong Kong rally organized by Beijing supporters at Tamar Park in the Admiralty District of Hong Kong. Subsequent reports covered the violent protests outside Beijing's liaison office in Hong Kong on Sunday night, when protesters sprayed anti-China slogans on the wall of the building and splashed black paint on the national emblem. Alfred Wu, an associate professor at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy in Singapore, said that as Beijing blocked access to many foreign news sites and other sources of information, most mainlanders did not have access to unbiased information and tended to believe Beijing's propaganda. Catherine Diss in ABC News Australia reports, Chinese construction boom in Cambodian town raises fears of secret military pact. A senior Cambodian defense official has rubbished reports that the country has signed a secret deal with China to allow Beijing to place armed forces at Ream Naval Base. In a move that has been seen as sidelining its relationship with the United States, the reported deal would allow China to host military assets and station troops at Ream for 30 years. But in an exclusive interview with ABC, Cambodia's defense spokesman, General Chum Suthit, repeatedly rejected the suggestion as fake news. Cambodia has leased huge tracts of land totaling 45,000 hectares to Chinese companies to build a mega resort, which will include a casino, an 18-hole golf course, and a jetty. An international airport with a 3-kilometer-long tarmac, long enough for commercial jets and military aircraft to land, is also part of the Dera Secor Seashore Resort long-term project. Kyoto reports, Japan's annual haul of young eels falls to lowest levels on record amid smuggling concerns. The domestic catch of juvenile eels for cultivation dropped this season to 3.7 tons, the lowest level since comparable data became available in 2003, fisheries agency data released earlier this month showed. In the period from November 2018 to May 2019, Japan imported 11.5 tons of young eels, the second highest on record according to the Finance Ministry's trade statistics. All of the imports came from Hong Kong, according to the data, which has raised suspicions about their origin since Hong Kong does not engage in eel fishing. Industry observers and environmental conservation groups say most of the young eels Japan imported from Hong Kong could have been illegally brought over from Taiwan, which bans exports of the fish. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Erasmus Baxter and Catherine Kashimova-Long report in the Seattle Times, city spammed with fake alerts after poster campaign to report homeless campers goes viral. The City of Seattle's Customer Service Bureau was swamped last week when an anonymous poster campaign encouraging residents to report tent camps went viral online, resulting in a far-reaching backlash that produced bogus complaints from as far away as Australia. The teal-blue posters bearing the slogan, "See a Tent, Report a Tent," urge Seattleites to use the city's Find It, Fix It app, a mobile tool for residents to ask for utility repairs, animal control, and other public services, to request that the city remove homeless campers. The posters, all or most of which have been taken down, went up late last week in central Seattle neighborhoods including Capitol Hill and Mount Baker. But left-leaning activists, arguing that reporting people experiencing homelessness was inhumane and heartless, rallied supporters on Twitter last weekend to protest the posters by submitting bogus reports on the app. Gordon Friedman reports in the Oregonian. Andy Ngo says he suffered brain injury during Portland mob beating. Andy Ngo, the conservative writer whose public beating during a rally in Portland caught the nation's attention last month, said that he suffered a brain injury during the assault. Ngo, an editor at the publication Quillette, was punched and kicked by people clad in black during a gathering in downtown Portland on June 29th. Video of the assault went viral and drew rebukes from liberal and conservative politicians across the United States. The beating also thrust Ngo from a relatively small yet vocal corner of the internet into a national spotlight that is increasingly focused on militant and often violent political activism in Portland. And last week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Stockwell Day tweets praise for China's Huawei hours before campaigning for conservative Wai Young. Vancouver City Hall gets dirtier as cleaning delayed at least a year. What do Huawei, SNC-Lavalin, and David Sidhu have in common? Go to thebreaker.news and read the stories behind these headlines. The Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
I got one question for you. Are you ready? Basketball fans, your 2019 NBA champion, Toronto Raptors. Let's start with the coaching staff. Director of Sports Science, Alex McKechnie.
The Toronto Raptors assistant coach Alex McKechnie came home on July 23rd with the Larry O'Brien Trophy, the NBA championship trophy that the Raptors won a month earlier in Oakland against the Golden State Warriors. The Scottish-Canadian physiotherapist is the director of sports science with the Raptors. McKechnie toured the trophy around Burnaby, where he got his start 45 years ago, and appeared at the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame, where the public was invited to take photos with the shiny golden prize. In 2018, McKechnie was inducted to the BC Sports Hall of Fame. This is what it sounded like at the induction ceremony.
Shaquille O'Neal, Paul Kariya, Steve Nash, Michelle Kwan, Terrell Owens, Craig Forrest, Jimmy Connors. Their names all read like a roll call of North American sports royalty, and they all have one thing in common. When injuries threaten their careers, they all turn to Alex McKechnie for help. Over 40 years of strengthening and rehabbing thousands of athletes, Alex has built an international reputation as a sports medicine guru. After growing up in Scotland and graduating from the Leeds School of Physiotherapy, Alex began his career in 1974 as Simon Fraser University's head physiotherapist. The Vancouver Whitecaps brought him on board in their inaugural season, and word soon spread of his success getting injured athletes back on the field. Over the next few decades, he continued to work with the Whitecaps and the 86ers, as well as the Vancouver Canucks and the Canadian men's national soccer team, including at Canada's memorable Gold Cup Championship in 2000. At the same time, Alex operated his own private sports medicine practice in Burnaby and barely slept as it expanded and helped thousands everyday athletes and stars alike. Over the years, he developed into a world authority on core training and movement integration, inventing the torsion board that Reebok later marketed and sold as the core board, and the CoreX system used by pro teams around the world. After Alex's work saved Shaq's career, the Los Angeles Lakers made him a full-time member of their staff, and he earned 5 NBA championship rings in 11 seasons. In 2011, the Toronto Raptors brought Alex back north, and he continues to work as the team's director of sports science to this day. An innovator and world leader in the field of sports science and physiotherapy, Alex McKechnie, welcome to the BC Sports Hall of Fame.
McKechnie's work with the Raptors gained him his 6th NBA championship ring. McKechnie is famous for what's called load management, which he described as a system of training and sustaining training. It is not necessarily about rest, but managing the load. Some players need more and some need less, but the goal is no peaks and no valleys and no yo-yo effect. McKechnie said that head coach Nick Nurse made AMJ a catchphrase among the team. The team was all about winning 16 games before losing 12 in April, May, and June. And McKechnie said that Kawhi Leonard's buzzer beater to eliminate the Philadelphia 76ers was the most incredible thing he had ever experienced. As he said, it was absolute euphoria. He is a Toronto Raptor for at least another year. McKechnie also spoke with reporters at the Sports Hall of Fame.
Director of Sports Science, Alex McKechnie.
So we know how the Stanley Cup travels around North America and around the world, but how does the Larry Brand Trophy travel?
Well, certainly in a big case, put it that way. Yes. And we have Tania, one of our members of our staff actually here, who travels with it, the creator of the trophy. And certainly, yeah, she's with it today and untouchable and follows it everywhere we go. So. Much the same way, I assume.
And obviously this isn't your first championship that you've been a part of, but how big of a feat is it, I mean, to win this one, to win with the Toronto Raptors, bringing it to Canada?
Well, I think, first of all, it's Canadian. Yeah, I think, you know, that is the most important thing, I think, at this point. Winning the championship in the past was terrific, but this, it really was organic. This grew from nothing. It exploded, you know, like I said, exploded through the course of the year. We, you know, there was a belief that we had, and this belief just continued to grow. And in the end, winning it, it was a massive. The climax was amazing. I think the whole country, it was organic, grew with it. It was infectious every round to round. People just grew with it. We were reading everything about, you know, Jurassic Parks opening up all across the country, and you know, trust me, our players, you know, recognize that and follow it, and staff realize that and realize how important it was to win and to bring it to Canada. It was pretty special.
And what was it like for you, as someone who spent so much time in Canada, who's lived here for a long time, to be part of that?
Well, I think that from a personal standpoint, it was so, you know, coming back to Canada from Los Angeles 8 years ago was something. I was just so happy to come back and work with the Canadian team at that point. And to see us grow as we did, it was organic. But more importantly, we just knew it was happening. And especially that, you know, for 5 years there, we were in and out of the playoffs. We went to the conference final, you know, lost the conference final, and beat quickly the next year. But there was always something there that we knew this was happening and it could grow. So from a personal standpoint, just, you know, winning it and as a Canadian was more important than anything, I guess. Yeah.
Now,
What set this team apart from other championship teams you've worked with?
A real belief. The coaching staff was amazing. There's a belief from the front office, a belief on everything was just... I think during my Laker years, and we had superstars, you know, with Shaq and Kobe Gasol, those years, the three-peat, then win again back-to-back. But there was an expectation of winning, and I think in this case, it wasn't really expected. You know, people, you know, it was like, are they for real? You know, those were the questions that media would ask. And you know what? That was the difference. I think there was a real belief within the group, and that just grew and grew and grew. So I think it was unselfishness, complete unselfishness within the room, within our locker room, a belief from the coaching staff, the ability to empower the players in order to do it. That's what makes a difference.
With some obvious change, you know, occurring at the Raptors, how are you feeling for next year going into the season?
Well, I think in anybody in any team sports is understand that there is never a consistency. You're always going to have change. You know, somebody leaves, people move on. It's just part of it. You know, you got to remember we had some pretty good players. You know, we've got, you know, Kyle Lowry's pretty good. You know, we've got Pascal Siakam, an emerging star. We've got Marc Gasol, another, you know, a solid player, as a star, all-star, defensive player of the year in the past. These are real, we've got solid players. Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell. I mean, I can go on and on. These are great OG Anunoby, rising stars. We're pretty good.
Was it disappointment for you at all to say goodbye to Kawhi?
Of course, I think, you know, you build relationships with the players. Mm-hmm. It was disappointing for me to say goodbye to Jonas Valanciunas.
Yes.
I knew him as a 17-year-old kid. To DeMar DeRozan, you know, of course it is. You know, these, but it's part of the game, and we realize that and understand it.
Did he talk to you before he signed in LA? Did he try and pull a Paul George with you as well?
No. No, he just said thank you for everything, and you know, we chatted. That was it. And moving forward, that's part of the game. You know, I'm Toronto Raptor.
And speaking of being a Toronto Raptor and looking forward to the next season, do you have another pet project, someone or something that you really want to take on and kind of work with next year?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. Good. Our whole group is we have these development programs within the group, and it's not any one person. I mean, these are collective things, you know. And yeah, we have a group, you know, that we meet all of the young players. In fact, I'm bringing 8 players to Burnaby first week of August again. And we bring them in and we do our baseline testing, identify issues with players, and then develop them from there. That's part of it. That's part of the challenge, and that's what makes it really rewarding from a personal standpoint to see these kids develop and move forward.
Is Burnaby your off-season home?
Off-season? Yes. Yeah. No. Well, actually, I have a home in Coquitlam.
Okay.
In Coquitlam. But Burnaby is where I had my office for many years, and I lived in Burnaby for many years. Yeah, so now I have a home in Coquitlam. Yeah.
I've got lots more, but if you guys...
Talk about how data and analytics changed your job over the years. It wasn't such an important... Technology wasn't so important.
Correct. I mean, interesting, like, basic principles never change, though. You know, that's the thing to understand is that you have, the bottom line is you bounce the ball, you put it in the hoop, right? The bottom line in my world, joints move, so move them. Muscles move joints, so you better work them. It's how you do it, right? It's about utilization of your skill set and the skill sets of people around you, and realization that, okay, there's some data here that we can look at and maybe contribute towards how players are feeling, how they're not feeling. So really, it's a tool, and it's another tool, and, you know, it's another tool that we can use in the toolbox, and it's a very, very positive thing. And I think from a personal standpoint, it's allowed me to really diversify, you know, in many ways, and I've created, reinvent myself a little bit even throughout the course of the year. So it's really changed the game in many different ways, but it's not the total answer. It's still there's so many moving parts that you have to deal with, and there's so many things that, I mean, analytics doesn't dictate emotional status in people. It doesn't dictate domestic issues they may have. There's so many different things to consider that it's just a small piece of the puzzle.
You touched a little bit in your remarks about how load management became this buzzword, not only around the NBA but around other sports as well.
Right.
Do you see that becoming more of a how teams manage these players?
I do. I think I see it becoming more of a recognition, like I'm mm-hmm. saying, in terms of, like, to your point about analytics. You know, I see it becoming understanding. Okay, these are real things, and how best can we utilize the information that we have. And again, load management is not about resting, it's about developing the programming, and that's really what's important. So yeah, I think it may be a factor. I mean, obviously I get lots of questions about does that mean every player's only going to play 60 games? Well, that's not the case. Players want to play, you know. You know, we had an unusual situation that we had to deal with. But players basically want to play. And it's about identifying, you know where you may want to take a change and make a rest at some point. And interesting, though, you know, like you look at other sports, you look at soccer, for example, they play one game a week, you know. So you're periodizing your program for 1 week and you're peaking towards the end of it. We can't do that, you know. We're looking at, there's lots of ways we can change it. You can monitor minutes, perhaps. You certainly, you know, once the season starts, there really is no practices to speak of. You know, there's practices, but it's more walk-through practice. And our challenge at that point is to get the players that don't play minutes to play. So we have got to maintain a workload on them. So we have to monitor that workload just as much as monitor the workload that players that are playing.
Yeah. I heard a rumor that after Kawhi signed, you got a text message saying you're the most important person in the organization now. Is that true?
No, not true. No, that actually, I got that text after he signed in Toronto, you mean?
In Toronto.
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
that is true. I thought you meant saying
that. No.
Yes, that is true. I did get that message, yes.
What kind of pressure did that put on you and your team?
My world, everything is totally objective. And you can't have any subjectivity with it. Emotions have to really be eliminated to some degree. It's subjectivity, is gone. And you've got to look at the whole process. You've got to identify what we're dealing with and move forward. So yes, it puts pressure on us, but at the same time, you know, it's a challenge, quite frankly. I kind of like it.
Yeah. How does load management or travel factor into load management, especially during the playoffs? Because for instance, the NBA final used to be 2-3-2.
Yeah.
They reverted to 2-2-1-1. Didn't have to go 7 this year, of course.
Yeah.
But there was that extra travel, and that is extra.
That's a big issue. I think that travel changed by right up in the early 2000s. I think that went back to it was 2-2. Yeah, you're right. 2-2-1-1-1. Yeah. And I went to 2-3-2, and I'm not sure why it went that way. I think a lot of the time it went that way from a media standpoint. Quite frankly, the media was having to travel back and forth and from TV, etc. But the fact is, yeah, it's got a big issue. You know, and we're going from one side to the other. We use sleep management. We use all sorts of analytics like that. We use Fatigue Science, which is a Vancouver-based company, actually. We identify a lot of sleep patterns as much as we can. And, you know, we'll use a lot of their information to build out our travel plans. You know, in terms of when do we leave a city? Do we leave that night? Do we leave the next day? Those are all factors we have to take into consideration. And let me tell you, they're not always met with you know, pleasantries, at that point. So we want to get home, but the best, the best decision for the team at the moment is we stay, and that's kind of what we have to do, and that's it, yeah. So big factor, yeah.
That was Alex McKechnie, the Director of Sports Science and Assistant Coach with the Toronto Raptors, speaking with reporters on July 23rd at the BC Sports Hall of Fame in Vancouver.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau. Sunny ways, my friends, sunny ways.
News item. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's right-hand man, Gerald Butts, quit the Prime Minister's office in February. But he's back on the inner circle of the Liberal re-election campaign. Here is a question period exchange from February.
Order. The Honourable Leader of the Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Canadians are losing confidence in this government because every single day the story changes. So now the explanation is that Gerald Butts was so good at his job that he just had to resign. It's scandal. But it's a continuation of a theme we've seen for days now. First, he tried to blame the former Attorney General. Then he tried to blame Scott Bryson. All the while, he was directing Liberals on the Justice Committee to block attempts at inviting key officials to testify. Do these sound like the actions of a man who has nothing to hide?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Just tell me,
has always and will always stand up for the institutions and the principles that underlie the strength of our democracy. We're unequivocal about that. That's why, whether it's respecting the independence of members of parliamentary committees or making sure that we are allowing for the full scope of judicial independence, we will always defend the systems and the institutions that keep Canada safe and prosperous as a democracy.
Order.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau. No! Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the folks on Laskiti Island, whose fourth annual Laskiti Styrofoam Day brought in 2 tons of beach waste. Good on the islanders for caring for their beach, but a reminder for those on the water and other islands and the mainland to secure your waste, to recycle and waste less. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 28th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on July 28th in 1984, the Summer Olympics opened in Los Angeles? The Eastern Bloc boycotted in retaliation for the U.S.-led boycott of the Moscow 1980 Games. It was the first Summer Games under the leadership of IOC President Juan Antonio Samaranch and marked a new chapter in commercialism of sport. Canada finished 6th in medal standings with 10 gold, 18 silver, and 16 bronze. Swimmer Alex Bauman had 2 of those golds. Lori Fung won the first gold in rhythmic gymnastics. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.